So I wanted to get into firefighting with you a little bit because you're a firefighter right now. Were you working during the big fires?
You talking about Alameda?
Yeah,
I was.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. So what? Tell us a little bit about your experience. I got a block and a half from me and Addison's house.
Yeah, so. It was overwhelming.
Yeah.
I've never experienced anything like that. Again, 98, I don't want to think about how long that is, but never seen anything like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was rough. One of my battalion chiefs described it as we fought for every inch that we lost, and we did. It was one of the first times, normally I've had fires. We've had literally one house fully involved and two torching off, and we can come up with a strategy and apply it. And you may have to lose more, but you have a plan that usually is going to have an end that's mostly controlled. In Alameda, it was just, threw everything we could at it, and it just blew right past us. And then we move and set up another line in the sand, throw everything at it, and it would just run past us. Got to the point multiple times where I was starting to think we were gonna lose the entire city.
Yeah.
Being Medford, I mean, everything that we...
Listening to it was pretty rough. I mean, the dispatchers are amazing. Uh-huh. And there's a little piece of some of that day in our intro, and it's a dispatcher from Jackson County Sheriff's Office saying, new structure, Main Street, she's talking about Phoenix, fully engulfed, and the one next to it, and the one next to it. And I can't imagine how heartbreaking that is to know that there aren't enough resources to fix a problem like that. I mean, the water runs dry eventually. There's only so much water. There's only so many people. There's only so many engines. And honestly, I worry about firefighters taking too much of that home because eventually it's outside your control.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and as an example, mobile home usually takes one hand line. We go through and put that thing out. And we had one spot where we tied into a hydrant. So I got a hydrant, I can stop this thing. And we had a 2.5-inch line, which flows 260 gallons a minute, and an 1.75-inch line, it's 150 gallons a minute. Like, we're gonna stop this coming through this mobile home park right here. And the window broke on it, and I had that 2.5 going into it, and it disappeared. That line just disappeared, and it was because of the wind, and it just, there was no stopping it.
Just vaporized it before it could even make it into the building to put anything out.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. For sure, it's definitely kind of a trip, and the stories the public will probably never hear. Lots of heroes that day. I heard them over the radio. I mean, Oregon State police officers loading people up that were invalids from homes and putting them in a field because he knew the fire couldn't get through the green field at least, and a couple of officers that were trying to bust into a trailer that was locked and they knew somebody was inside of it, and those two cops sounded like pretty panicked, and they got him out. Mm-hmm. And Talent Avenue, my house is on Talent Avenue. I'm on the side that didn't burn, and there were a couple of firefighters that stayed behind with an engine that ran up and down Talent Avenue putting out embers so the other side of town wouldn't burn when everybody had to go. Because when we hear one alarm, two alarm, three alarm fires, number of battalions being called out, this is like all battalions from everywhere, including south and north of us, all trying to stop the same thing. Pretty amazing how American citizens that are first responders will put their life on the line and put everything into trying to stop something like that, even if it's fruitless.
I can't even begin to guess how many lives were saved by law enforcement. And as we moved back, we would get into an entire subdivision and everybody was gone. And what a advantage to not have, because if we were back there and there's civilians, we're going to be spending
time putting all the civilians out instead of trying to save
the properties. And we could just fight the fire, and then they saved.
They got them out before you were there.
Yeah, I have to guess thousands of lives.
Wow. Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah,
I'm sure.
You talk about the embers. I remember there was one spot we were set up on the street, and the front's coming, and you hear those crazy explosions going off, and there's this black wall. And I've got my crew set up, and we're tied into a hydrant. We have three engines tied into hydrants, and we got the deck guns falling. And I look to my left, and there's this little ember burning in this pile of bark. It's like two houses down. I said, well, it'd be pretty lame if we stopped the fire here and started this house on this side and kept running. So I ran over and I kicked it out. went back to the engine, turned back around, looked over there again, and it's an area about this big with embers. Ran over there and kicked them all out. Nothing left. And went back to the engine. The front's coming. It's getting dark over us. And there is a 20-foot stream of embers going down into this. And it,
all that wind blowing.
How do you stop that?
Yeah, you don't.
Yeah.
I appreciate you telling us about that. It's I think that's the first time we've had anybody in person on to that talked about those fires. The hard thing.
Yeah, it was, even going into it, it was, that grass fire and then the structures, and we came in and there's vehicles abandoning and a flame front come in, turned around, started abandoning houses, then just fighting fire at will.
And those two fires, the original one that started in Ashland, and then the guy that started the fire that continued it even more, made it bigger in Phoenix. I was listening to the radio that morning because I knew the winds were going on, and aside from that, there were wires arcing everywhere. So yeah. I think it could have been even worse. We should count our blessings.
Yeah,
there's still houses around, and people are getting help now, and I'm seeing construction in talent now.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah,
and they talk about the being the perfect storm, and it was. I mean, we were geared up, and it was, this is coming. Something's got the potential to come, and it did.
Is there anything that, we publish this to about 125,000 Facebook accounts. Is there anything that you'd like the public to know about firefighting? That's a trick question, a long one, big open-ended one.
Well,
is there any way the public can help you, that kind of stuff?
Well, everybody loves a firefighter.
Yeah.
I hate to say it. Like, I hang out with my cop buddies, and when we're at training or whatever, and I'm wearing a different uniform, I get different looks. And the public is great to us. And, where I work, we have great equipment, great everything, training, esprit de corps. It's a great career. I've never not loved my job.
Keep calling them in when you see something that you think is burning. And definitely, if you see some firefighters out with a boot, that's a pretty famous thing. Fill the boot for them, and don't stop waving at them and liking the firefighters.
Yeah, we like that.
Well, the one thing I remember from my career is, we would respond to a house fire.
Yeah.
And you could hear the big boys coming, and as they're rolling up, you could just see the excitement on their face, like it's time to go to work. And then they get out, and it's like, oh man. And then they go in and they investigate something, and we leave, and just this depressed look on their face. It's like, good for them, but we want to play.
You want to want to save the day every day, right?
Yeah. It's as with your job, it's a weird juxtaposition. You want to do your job, and you want to do your job well. But unfortunately, when you do your job well, somebody's being affected negatively.
Yeah,
right.
So that's right. The balance of it.
A lot of adrenaline involved in a job like that, I imagine.
Yeah.
But the one question I do have, you're responding just to a house fire. Is it true that you plan your attack on the house fire by what the flames are doing?
Oh, a lot of that, yeah. Yeah. So when you pull up on a structure fire, you're reading the building, you're reading what the flames are doing, and you're coming up with a plan about where you're going to put your first line, what's the possibility or probability of a rescue. That's obviously takes priority over everything else. Even if when you look at a lot of buildings that look fully involved, they're like, oh, it's a write-off. Well, there still might be survivable spaces. So 75% of the building's on fire, but there's a bedroom on the backside on the second floor that we can throw a ladder to and break a glass and go in and pull out a victim. We had I was at another fire locally where we had that. We had multiple rescues going on at the same time, and we were able to get a crew in to go attack the fire while another crew was going from the outside and making rescues.
Man, I think I'd rather deal with an armed subject than a fire.
I think the thing that would surprise people the most about fighting fires are the lack of visibility. Any good work in fire, you've got zero visibility, and we use ticks. I'm old, so I usually go more off of sound and watching smoke movement and stuff like that to find the seat of the fire, but the thermal imagers are great. But it's that you're blind. And guys are stumbling around and falling, and you're crawling a lot of times, but when you don't have to, you're up on your feet moving and tripping over junk and a lot of crashing with a lot of weight on you.
I'll bet.
Thanks for tuning in to the Scanner Group Crowdsourced Crime and Safety Podcast with Ryan Mallory and Jared Banery from Thief Hunter Labs. Make sure to subscribe today for notifications about the next show. Visit us at www.thiefhunterlabs.com or on Facebook as Thief Hunter Labs in the search bar.